The president's asked me to become director and do a complete house cleaning at my discretion. I need someone I can trust. After all, we're still brothers. This building doesn't get built without you. You're CIA's heart and soul. Who knows? You might have a secret about me in that safe of yours. This whole wing will be your part of the world. Counterintelligence. Take a look around. I've got an oversight meeting. Can you imagine? They think they can look into our closet as if we'll let them. I remember a senator once asked me, when we talk about CIA, why we never use the word the in front of it. And I asked him, do you put the word the in front of God?
Finders, kidnappers, Nazis. According to a Customs Service memorandum, the CIA and the FCIA, foreign counterintelligence agencies, distinct and autonomous organization within the FBI, were both involved in a mysterious group with behavior similar to the one in Nebraska, known as the Finders. CIA ownership of this organization was kept secret for 7 years after local law enforcement uncovered its practice of child abduction, kiddie porn, ritual abuse, and slavery. In early February 1987, an anonymous tip to the Tallahassee, Florida police brought cops out like bloodhounds. The caller said two well-dressed men seemed to be supervising six disheveled and hungry children in a local park. The two men were identified as members of the Finders. They were charged with child abuse in Florida, and Washington, D.C., police and U.S. Customs Service agents raided a duplex apartment building and a warehouse connected to the group. Among the evidence seized were detailed instructions on obtaining children for unknown purposes. Several photos of new children were found, one of which appeared to accent the child's genitalia. The customs agents determined that the children may have been en route to Mexico from Washington. Customs had been contacted because police officers suspected the adults of being involved in child pornography, and they knew the Customs Service had a network of child pornography investigators in their child pornography and protected unit. When the customs agents came on the scene, police had two well-dressed white males and six white children aged 3 to 6 in custody. According to the customs memorandum, the children were poorly dressed, bruised, dirty, and behaving like animals in a public park in Tallahassee when they were taken into custody. The subjects were living in a white 1979 Dodge van with Virginia plates. When taken into custody, the adult white males refused to cooperate. One of them produced a business card with a name on one side and a statement on the other. The statement indicated that the bearer knew his constitutional rights to remain silent and they intended to do so. Upon interviewing the children, the memorandum said, the police officers found that they could not adequately identify themselves or their credentials. Further, they stated that they were en route to Mexico to attend a school for smart kids. The children were unaware of the function and purpose of telephones, televisions, and toilets, the memorandum said. The children stated they were not allowed to live indoors and were only given food as a reward. One wonders for what? In the large Tallahassee van, police discovered large quantities of records, computer disks, and U.S. passports. From some of the records, the police obtained identification of two adults and partial identification of the children. This led to search warrants of two Washington, D.C. addresses owned by the Finders Group. An informant gave the police information regarding a cult by that name operating at various businesses, one of which was a warehouse for the children. The information was specified in describing blood rituals and sexual orgies involving children and, as yet, unsolved murder in which the Finders may be involved, the memorandum went on to say. With the information provided by the informant, detectives were able to match some of the children in Tallahassee with the names of children alleged to be in the custody of the Finders, the memorandum stated. During the execution of the warrant at 3918 20 West Street, the memorandum said, "I was able to observe and access the entire building. I saw large quantities of children's clothing and toys. The clothing consisting of diapers and clothes in the toddler to preschool range. No children were found on the premises. There were several subjects on the premises. Only one was deemed to be connected with the Finders. Stewart was located in a room equipped with several computers, printers, and numerous documents." Cursory examination of the documents revealed detailed instructions for obtaining children for unspecified purposes. The instructions included the impregnation of female members of the community known as Finders, purchasing children, trading, and kidnapping. They were telex messages using MCI account numbers between a computer terminal believed to be located in the same room, and others located across the country and in foreign locations. One such telex specifically ordered the purchases of two children in Hong Kong to be arranged through a contact in the Chinese embassy there. Another telex expressed an interest, quote, bank secrecy situations. Other documents identified interest in high-tech transfers to the United Kingdom and numerous properties under the control of the Finders, a keen interest in terrorism, explosives, and the evasion of law enforcement. Also found in the computer room was a detailed summary of the events surrounding the arrest and taken into custody of two adults and six children in Tallahassee, Florida, on the previous night. There were also a set of instructions which appeared to be broadcast via computer network, which advised participants to move the children and keep them moving through different jurisdictions, and instructions on how to avoid police attention. At the other Washington address, the customs agent writing the memo was again granted unlimited access to the premises. "I was able to observe numerous documents which describe explicit sexual conduct between the members of the community known as Finders. I also saw a large collection of photographs of unidentified persons. Some of the photographs were nudes, believed to be of members of the Finders. There were numerous photos of children, some nude, at least one which was a photo of a child on display and appearing to accent the child's genitalia. I was only able to examine a very small amount of the photos at this time. However, one of the officers presented me with a photo album for my review. The album contained a series of photos of adults and children dressed in white sheets participating in a blood ritual. The ritual centered on the execution of at least two goats. The photos portrayed the execution, disembowelment, skinning, and dismemberment of the goats at the hands of the children. This included the removal of the testes of the male goat, the discovery of the female's goat womb and the baby goat inside the womb, and the presentation of the goat's head on one of the children," the memo said. Further inspection of the premises disclosed numerous files relating to activities of the organization in different parts of the world. Location I observed are as follows: London, Germany, the Bahamas, Japan, Hong Kong, Malaysia, Africa, Costa Rica, and Europe. There are also files identified as Palestinian. Other files were identified by member name or project name. The projects to be appearing operated for commercial purposes under front names for the Finders. There is only one file entitled Pentagon Break-In, and others which refer to members operating in foreign countries. Not observed by me, but related by an officer, were intelligence files on private families not related to the Finders. The process undertaken appears to have been a systematic response to local newspaper advertisements for babysitters, tutors, etc. A member of the Finders would respond and gather as much information as possible about the habits, identity, occupation, etc. of the family. The use to which this information was to put is still unknown. There was also a large amount of data collected on various child care organizations. The warehouse contained a large library, two kitchens, a sauna, a hot tub, and a video room. The video room seemed to be set up as an indoctrination center. It also appeared that the organization had the capability to produce its own videos. There was what appeared to be training areas for children and what appeared to be an altar set up in a residential area of the warehouse. Many jars of urine and feces were located in this area. I should also mention that both premises were equipped with satellite dish antennas. One assumes these were uplink as well as downlink antennas. U.S. Customs interests, the memo concludes, now lie in the purpose behind the inquiries into bank secrecy laws, the type and purpose of high-tech transfers outside of the U.S., and the purpose of the organized procurement and smuggling of children across the U.S. international borders. The possibility still exists that the children are being smuggled for a primary or secondary purpose of producing child pornography. Other agencies with interest may be the Internal Revenue Service, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Defense, and the FBI. The FBI is already involved in the investigation of the transportation of the children already discovered across state lines as it pertains to the Mann Act. In an attached memo dated April 13, 1987, the cryptocracy secret unraveled. Referring to the previous memo by date and description, subject finders from special agent, this memo reads, quote, I spoke to a third party who was willing to discuss the case with me on a strictly off-the-record basis. I was advised that all the passport data had been turned over to the State Department for their investigation. The State Department in turn advised Metropolitan Police Department that all travel and use of the passports by the holders of the passports was within the law and no action would be taken. This included travel to Moscow, North Korea, North Vietnam from the late 1950s to mid-1970s. The individual further advised me of circumstances which indicated that the investigations and the activity of the finders had become a CIA internal matter. The police report has been classified secret and was not available for review. I was advised that the FBI had withdrawn from the investigation several weeks prior, and the FBI Foreign Counterintelligence Division had directed the police not to advise the FBI field office of anything that had happened. No further information will be available, no further action will be taken, end quote. An attached chronology points out the CIA made one contact and admitted to owning the Finders organization as a front for domestic computer training operations, but that it had gone bad. CIA defers all but that it had gone bad to further contacts to the Foreign Counterintelligence Agency. FCIA is distinct and autonomous organization within the FBI. The conclusion of the chronology reads, children discovered in Tallahassee were eventually turned over to individuals claiming to be parents or guardians. No further MPD, FBI, or customs involvement. As far as it is known, no details of CIA or FCIA involvement ever became public, was the final line of the customs report. As best we could determine, the finder's memo was leaked to former People magazine and ABC News correspondent Sylvia Tamarkin by a patriotic person or person she will not name. Tamarkin is a long-term investigator of the ritual abuse phenomena. The problem is the whole ritual abuse network is corrupted. The survivors even have a forum on Prodigy. They're cross-pollinating and corrupting the information. Maybe it's on purpose. A lot of people in the mental health community would like to fit this all into a neat little package, and it doesn't. If I get one more call from the therapist who says I have a Monarch patient, Tamarkin said, there's no official evidence that Project Monarch exists. So then you start pushing. How do you know it's called this? How do you know this term? You find out someone else gave them the term, and one told another, and pretty soon it's all-encompassing term for mind control. You gotta be real careful with this stuff, see? The minute any survivor has recall of torture or electroshock, sensory deprivation, etc., there is a tendency to leap on it and say it's mind control, it's MK Ultra, Monarch, or whatever. The fact is that a lot of it is torture, as simply as that. It's used in the Greek military, the Latin American military, across the board, you name it. There's this tendency, the minute where there's a disclosure about electroshock, for therapists who say, ah, mind control. There were documents about a camp in New Hampshire, 6 documents. The CIA went out and looked for people who were doing this research that played into what they were looking into, and they funded it. There is preponderance of survivors who claim to have military background. Their parents do, or whatever. I do not believe that all of them were victims of MKUltra or some CIA program. There was a recent study that came out showing the high rate of domestic abuse amongst military families, and I think that's consistent. I said, yeah, that's the fertile field that they farmed, I guess. Exactly, Sevilla said. That's the fertile field. Along the same lines that there were quid pro quos with known molesters, known perpetrators, there was an attempt to deal with a subject group that had a trauma base. Hysteria factors into this, Sevilla said. There's a tendency to generalize, and of course, I've been fighting for years this cult stuff. I've heard well-recognized, reputable therapists talk about the cult personality, the cult trying to get the survivor back, the cult, 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 when they should be talking about the perpetrators, offenders, sex rings, whatever. It had become a catch-all. I gave a speech in February 1994, and I looked at this group and I asked them, what's a cult? Let's count how many we can. Are you talking about Moonies, Hare Krishnas, or what? The point is that they use cult as a catch-all term. Now, what about the Finder's documents? I asked. I had the Finder's documents for years, Tamarican said. I had them back on the 1980s. Everyone jumps at this. They don't say the CIA is involved, she said. What they say is, what we do know is that the Finder's group was a CIA front as an information gathering organization. The fact that some of these kids may have been molested by members of the group who are living a communal lifestyle, and the fact that the investigation was scuttled and turned over to FBI counterintelligence, does not mean anything. People who don't know how the operates have a tendency to lump it together and say, this is proof. All it means is that an intelligence operation became vulnerable because members of this group may or may not have been acting irresponsibly and criminally with children, to which there was never any proof, by the way. They covered it up to protect the intelligence end of it, which is not conclusive in any way. Intelligence communities, law enforcement at any level use informants, have operatives, and if those operatives go out on a limb, whether it's money laundering, whether it's pornography, whether it's drug use, you name it, you cover that up because you're protecting your sources. And that's what they happened there. But if we repeal the National Security Act the way we've repealed the Volstead Act, then all of these secrets will come out, huh? I said. Yeah, Tamarkin said. And all the informants will be known, and there will be no plea bargaining anymore, and people are going to get fair trials, and there's going to have to be a 12-man jury system, and the Bill of Rights will be in effect once again. How do you feel about that? I asked. You know what? They should have done that years ago. This is a shadow government, so it's not surprising. And that's how the Finder's thing has gotten so distorted. If you look at the customs agent report, it's not conclusive. I've studied it for years. I've dealt with the agent involved. There was no follow-up on it? I asked. Well, they began looking at it again back in January 1993 because some of the legislators were making a big stink about it, but nothing ever came of it. Was the Finders a computer whiz kid of sort of thing? I asked. Sure, she said. They were involved in transferring money. Yes, but that doesn't mean they were involved in Satanism. Certainly looks like they were transporting little kids to Mexico, I said. Well, Tamarkin said, the group that was caught in Florida alleged they were taking these kids on a field trip to Mexico. The two adults were members of the Finders group and they had CIA connections. But again, given the fact, if one assumes that all that is factual and they were in fact prostituting kids or molesting them, it doesn't mean it was a CIA operation. I began to get the impression that Tamarkin was stretching things a long way in favor of the cryptocracy, maybe believing the National Security Act was a good thing. Let me ask this, I said this. Back in the 1970s during the Vietnam War, there was a big ring with smuggling heroin sewn up their dead bodies and soldiers killed in war. Three guys were brought to trial. A DOD guy showed up, flashed his ID, took the judge into chambers and said, "In the interest of national security, you can't prosecute these guys." The case was dismissed. Who is smuggling the heroin? The three guys or the cryptocracy? "We don't know. We do know," Tamarkin said, sticking to the official records, the crimes that had been uncovered and officially acknowledged, offshore activities that Congress had prohibited, being funded through heroin trafficking. "We know that. Now we know that. See, there's a whole lot of perks going down in the intelligence biz," she said. "Doesn't it look like the same black ops thing hanging over the finders?" I asked. "No," she said, "because we don't know if it was sanctioned by the CIA. We know the heroin trafficking was." Is this an example of playing it safe journalism? In this way, nobody relies on the news media to keep them up to date. By the time the cryptocracy confesses, the crime has been over for 20 years. Or is Tamarkin merely conditioned by media peer pressure? Pressure from her peers to not think for herself, to not dare to use common sense. Pressure from peers in a profession that is, by a former CIA director's candid admission, thoroughly co-opted. What kind of country has this one become? What kind of world? What evil infests the land which allows innocence to be corrupted in the cradle? What evil seeks children torture? What civilization abandons its children, gives them drugs, shocks them, hypnotizes them, and harbors sexual assault by their family, their clergy, and representatives of their government? And what kind of people and what kind of institutions are these which encourage such perversions, as if the success of the system depends on proving for sexual deviants? What agency protects the pedophiles, the sexually dysfunctional sadists, the Satanists, and blood sacrificers who can then be controlled through their carnal desires by the invisible hand of blackmail? It is a world in which the most decadent and barbaric Romans would feel at home. It is a world in which the Nazis are at home. Is this the Fourth Reich by design of the conquering heroes of World War II? Did the victors, the Allies, become the enemy they fought? In his book, From Mass Murderers and White Coats, Psychiatric Genocide in Nazi Germany and the United States, Lenny Lapin presents the results of several years of research and his experience as an active participant in the psychiatric inmates liberation movement. Over the years, Lapin met, struggled with, listened to, and read the writings of many hundreds, if not thousands, of other people to prove his thesis that Nazi attitudes and technologies had been smuggled into the United States and put in place by the new form of government, cryptocracy. The atrocities committed by the cryptocracy over the past 50 years or more were new to this country, but it began, not coincidentally, more than 63 years ago in fascist Italy. As Lapin puts it, quote, "torture by electroshock, ECT, was introduced in a fascist country, Italy, in 1939 by Ugo Cerletti, which has been used to terrify and to burn out the brain cells of millions of America's victims of psychiatry. Many also died from ECT and other forms of shock treatment, such as insulin, coma therapy, ICT, methanol, a convulsive addiction drug. According to one survey, between 1941 and 1977, there were at least 384 published reports of ECT-related deaths. This, undoubtedly, is only the tip of the iceberg, because most deaths from psychiatric drugs and electric shock are not published or even reported." Parallels can easily be drawn between the labeling and invalidating of people in the two countries and overlapping periods. The term used included schizophrenic, retarded, mentally deficient, useless life, feeble-minded, and socially inadequate, to name just a few usually misleading and incorrect diagnoses. In Nazi Germany, Lapin tells us, euphemisms such as euthanasia and race hygiene were used to legitimize the mass killings, sterilizations, and experiments done on mental patients, Jews, and others. Today, U.S. psychiatry labels people's problems, i.e. poverty, and emotions, i.e. anger and frustration, as mental illness, and then claims to be helping them infrequently by involuntary incarceration in mental hospitals, forced drugging, electroshock treatments, psychosurgery, and behavior modification. behavior modification is no less than an attempt to totally control people by taking away their freedom and rights and calling them privileges to be earned back. The whole area of psychiatric abuse is even referred to as mental hygiene. Psychiatrists and others who had practiced or studied in Nazi Germany came to the United States and remain in this so-called field of medicine under real or assumed names. It is well known that Nazi rocket scientist Wernher von Braun was warmly welcomed along with his Nazi aerospace team into this country and that they helped build the U.S. space program. Less widely known is the fact that Reinhard Gulden, Hitler's chief of intelligence in the East, he spied on Russia, was brought to the U.S. by our military. In 1947, Gerlein was a key figure in setting up the CIA. In light of these facts and the previously described similarities in Nazi and U.S. psychiatric methods, cannot one, in fact, shouldn't one assume and look into the probability that a Nazi psychiatrist would feel comfortable with new colleagues in this country and they with him, and that some of them would immigrate here? Lapin asks. Franz J. Kalman was a well-known psychiatrist, a professor at Columbia University, who did a lot of research on twins in connection with the genetics of schizophrenia. Kalman was born and educated in Germany. Before coming to the United States in 1936, his work for 2 years in Berlin and Munich under the Nazi regime, Lapin writes. Kalman was a researcher at the New York State Psychiatric Institute from 1936 until 1965 and was chief of psychiatric research there beginning in 1952. Interestingly, John Marks, formerly of the U.S. State Department, wrote that the government intelligence agencies did LSD and mescaline experiments at New York State Psychiatric during the 1950s. At least one experimental subject was killed in a CIA-sponsored program at this institute. Harold Blauer, as we described in detail elsewhere, a former Army colonel, died on June 8, 1953, less than 2.5 hours after being injected with mescaline derivative over this protest, Lapin reminds us. Later on in his book, Lapin looks at and, in some cases, even interviews U.S. psychiatrists who worked and or studied in Nazi Germany. Before that, he describes the gruesome euthanasia program under which psychiatrists in the Third Reich killed nearly all their patients. Thank you.